Hey everyone, this is Jessica Nevins, and this is the Divine It Girl Radio Show. And I am here with my lovely co-host, Therese. Therese, hello, are you there?
Yes, hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing pretty good.
Awesome. We are really excited to bring you another edition of Invoking the Muse. This is part 5, and we are so excited. We have another amazing guest for you today. We've got Richard Danielson. Richard, are you there? Hello.
Yay, I am here. I'm happy to be here. Good afternoon or good morning, wherever you're at.
Awesome. We are so happy to have you here. And for those of you listening out there, I'm just going to give you a little bit of a background on Richard, and he's going to help me fill in the details here. Richard is currently a drummer in the band Vintage Trouble, and they have been touring for something crazy like 5 years, and they have played all kinds of venues, from really small intimate venues to sold-out arenas all over the world. And he is multi-talented. He's not just limited to drums. He plays multiple instruments. He writes, and he has acted in the past as well. He's So welcome, Richard. And do you just want to add to that? There's so much that you're going to bring to the show. I know this. So if you could just fill in some details there for me, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, Divine It Girl, what a great double entendre play on words. Somebody's been chasing the muse with that. That's a really great little thing you got there, Jessica.
Oh, thank you.
I love it. It's great. It's magical even. There's magic in it. So, chasing the muse, you know, it's something that I feel like I've been doing all my life in various forms. You know, I started off playing music in my youth. I took that all the way till I was about 21 years old, and I moved to Los Angeles. You know, back in the day, Los Angeles is where everyone from around the world, you know, chased their dreams. People are still doing it, and I love Los Angeles for that reason. You know, the cool thing about L.A., really, a lot of people kind of give it a bad rap, but what I've always loved it is, you know, people have gotten off their couches from all over the world, and they come there to chase their muse, whatever that is. A lot of it's acting, a lot of it's writing, there's directors, there's musicians, you know, all forms of people in the industry. So I love the city for that. And I eventually was that guy. I had to get up and make that move. And but what's funny is I moved to Los Angeles. I had moderate success in the music business. And then something just changed, and I started chasing the muse of acting. And I did that for quite a number of years and found some moderate success there as well, which was really quite a surprise for me. I'd never intended to be an actor, although I've always loved film. But, you know, the actor bug just caught me, so to speak. So I'd love to be able to talk about that. And then I kind of waned on that a bit, and I started writing, and that was something that I'm even chasing today and even this morning. I wake up every morning, I write. I'm working on my first novel. I've written books of poetry. So that's a muse that I am completely enthralled with and love so much. But I actually came back to music about 6 years ago, and I've been doing it ever since, and I've had really good success with this band, Vintage Trouble, that you talked about. We've been touring the world, and I feel so blessed and fortunate to have been able to actually come back to music at this level and actually live out my dream, which, you know, my original dream started when I was a youth to play music. So that brings us up into today, and been chasing that muse in so many different, you know, forms, but it's funny how they're all kind of coming from the same place.
Yeah, it's interesting how they weave in and out. Because Therese and myself, we have similar experiences where there are multiple ways that the muse has worked through us. I mean, you know, I am a fiction writer. I'm, you know, also a coach and an intuitive. So when I'm in a session, there's a lot of information I get that just flows through. And then, you know, part of this show also has an element of it where we work with the muse because we just allow whatever comes to enter the show. You know, this is not a scripted show. That's part of what Therese and I love about it, is that it just free flows. And then, you know, earlier in my life, I was a dancer. And so when you get into that performance, you get into this on the stage, you surrender. and the muse just takes over. It's amazing. Like, Therese, did you want to talk about that a little bit too? I mean, because you're, you know, just like us, you're very talented in several different areas where you're bringing the muse in, just like Richard was talking about. Like, he's got these several different loves that all come together.
Yeah. In fact, there's a personality type. I've mentioned it before. It's the multi-potentiality personality type. Where,
I love that. That's a great phrase. I've never heard that.
Yeah, it's about someone who is multi-passionate. And so, and I think that more and more in this time, we as beings are just starting to understand that there's not just one way that this information or this creativity is coming through us. It's coming through in, like, multiple ways. And so I love that you talk about the fact that, you know, you've done music, you've done acting, you're doing writing right now, and you're just kind of riding whatever wave that the creativity is flowing through. Because it ripples back. It's so interesting because it sort of looks like, when I see the energy of it, I see like an infinity loop going back and forth. And so sometimes as it dips down, it looks like, for me right now, literally, I'm in a painting phase again. Or it's just
nice.
Like that's where I'm drawn.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm painting right now. But it loops back and it goes back to my intuitive work, and then the acting and voiceover work that I've done wants to come in, and I just have to honor it, kind of go where I'm feeling it.
I love it.
Really,
I love it.
Yeah.
You're saying that it's kind of a loop, and it's great that you're honoring it. You know, for a while, I kind of had a little bit of a regret because when I was a kid, you know, I did have talent in music, and I had the right connections. I had everything going on. I was in great bands. I probably should have, you know, stuck with music, but I just got swept into these other things and chasing these other muses, and parts of me were always like, what are you doing? Maybe you made the wrong choice, even though I was having such a good time. But it's only now, after I'm coming back to this loop that you're talking about, that I'm able to honor, like you said, you know, the whole process and look back at it and say, you know what, I did absolutely the right thing. I just went after what was speaking to me, and the muse was speaking to me in so many different ways. Why not honor that and run with that if it's making you happy? I mean, I think if a muse is not making you happy, or the muse, or however you want to say it, then, you know, maybe you're not doing the right thing.
Right, or you're trying to force the creativity to flow through a channel, because being multi-passionate like you are, I think that you are aware that there are different energies that are coming through. So you know that if you're getting the urge to write, if you're feeling this intuitive, creative energy coming through you to write, and you go to try and pick up an instrument instead of a pen, it's not going to translate.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize that because they hammer out their dreams and sometimes things don't work, but sometimes it's good to put down the pen, or it's good to put down the instrument. And, you know, the pen can speak in different ways, you know. For example, I am a better drummer than I was even early on because I'm able to bring more life experience to my playing, which has absolutely nothing to do with playing the drums. But somehow, me being a more rounded soul later down life here, I'm able to actually be a more well-rounded drummer. So actually, you know, putting down those drumsticks was probably actually a good thing for me. And then all these other voices that I've been able to sort of hone in on, whether it's writing or acting, you know, I said earlier, it's all kind of coming from the same place. So it's all kind of feeding into this, you know, grand muse, I guess. Although for me, the muse is still the same muse, and it's funny how I think of her as female. So I hope you don't mind if I say she throughout this, because
no, that's fine. I think of her that way too. So
yeah, it's a female to me, because for me the muse has always sort of had that. I don't know. I mean, a female, you know, for me is I was raised by women. You know, I was raised by sisters and a mom. You know, a female is extremely loyal. You know, if you nurture her in all the right ways, they can be a little fickle. You know, just like a muse. And I'll try to keep this PG, by the way. But you know,
well, we have moments in our show that just so go off the PG track that it's.
Oh, they do. But, well, come on.
Yeah, we do. We have moments where it's like, whoop, gone, and then, you know,
okay,
but
right.
we honor it. We honor it. All of it.
Try to keep it down. Well, the muse is very sexy to me because what you know, people in their art, when they're raw and just pure and stripped down and real, there's nothing sexier than that. And that's when I think they're at their best, is when they're, you know, when they're letting it flow through them, and even in a naive way sometimes. Like some people that are so talented don't even know that they're talented, but we can't take our eyes off them because that muse is working, you know. Something is working where they're not in the way, you know. I think it's really important for people to stay out of their way. A lot of times I feel like people just get in their way, and that's when the muse isn't flowing through them. And I can feel that sometimes with myself if I'm forcing something, you know. Half the battle is just staying out of your own way so you can be this conduit for this energy that is wanting to flow through you. You just need to let it happen.
So how do you do that? How do you get out of your own way? What's your secret?
You know, I got to make sure my ego is in check and make sure that I'm coming from the right place. You know, make sure I believe in what I'm doing and that I'm doing it for the right reasons. You know, for, you know, writing, for example, like I'm not writing for anybody. I'm not trying to be a famous novelist. I'm not writing for an audience. I cannot help but wake up every morning and work on this novel that I'm working on. Because it's coming from a pure place, and I'm really feeding my own instincts, my own desires. But if I feel like if I was having to write for something else, and I'm not saying that's for everyone. I know that a lot of novelists, you know, they have to hone in their thing and they have to write for a certain thing, and that's great. I think I'm just lucky right now because I'm on my first actual novel, and it's really, you know, everyone says they have a good story in them, at least one. So I really try to stay out of my way by not seeking approval. You know, it's really something that just stinks on people sometimes when they're seeking approval. Same thing with drums. You know, if I'm trying to, you know, to show off, you know, and stuff, which I do, you know, I can't help it sometimes. But I got to check myself because, you know, my groove might not be as good, or it's just, I'm not my best when I'm that. I'm at my best when I'm really just trying to please my own muse, which is why I'm doing this in the first place, which is to feed my soul, you know. So I think staying out of your way, to answer your question, is, you know, make sure you check your ego in at the door, because once your ego gets involved, I think things start to fall apart a little bit.
Yeah. When we were talking with Dawn and with Julia, this kind of came up, and what we were discussing, or what I brought, and I want to see, well, I want your 10 cents on this, but it's
10 cents.
Instead of 2 cents, I need 10 cents from you, okay? So
11. No. Make it
11. Okay,
11. 11, cents. Yeah. Master number, I love it.
Okay. My sense goes to 11, just saying.
Yeah, turn it up to 11. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so we were talking about, you just said get, you know, check your ego at the door. And we were talking about that when you're really connected, when you're really getting in there, there is an awareness from the artist. And from the creator, let's put it that way, because you don't have to be an artist to tap into this energy. But
right.
There's an awareness that you are the conduit. You're the channel. You're not the source. Source is channeling through you.
Yep, I could not agree more. I feel like I'm at my best when I get at the end of something and I don't know how I got there.
Mm-hmm.
Something happened. And I would love to... I do believe that. I do believe. Get out of your way. You know, we're all intelligent and spiritual beings, and so much energy and stuff flows through us, and we have so much life experience that we don't even realize on this unconscious level, that if we can let ourselves be a conduit for anything we want to do, and it doesn't even have to be art. You know, you can bring your art into any career you have, if you want to even call it art, whatever it is. You know, you're so right. If people, you know, have a certain awareness, or... you know, if they're unconscious in a way, you know, which is, I guess, being supremely aware. I mean, if however you want to word it, I couldn't agree more. And that's what I was saying earlier, that it's so beautiful and sexy to see people that are unaware of themselves and have left their ego at the door and are just having these wonderful moments. That's why we can't take our eyes off certain actors, certain musicians, why certain writers turn us on so much. They just seem to be tapped into this energy, and it's such a beautiful place. It's something that I think we all want.
And when you say that, with that comes this willingness to be vulnerable.
Yeah, you know, vulnerable is such a vulnerable word.
It really is. It's one of those words that makes people go, oh, 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 that word.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
But I hate to use the word sex a lot, but it's so sexy to be vulnerable or to see it in somebody else. I mean, that's what is the turn on. You know, when you see that singer just bleeding out that emotion, or you see that actor on stage and you're believing everything because they're believing it and they're tapped into that place, you know. God, vulnerability is just such a beautiful, beautiful thing. I love it so much.
Magnetic.
You know, exercise it a little more. I mean, it's hard to put yourself there sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because there's what comes up with that, and I'm sure you can speak to this too, but there's fear, you know, that, you know, sometimes it shows up, especially if you're performing, a stage fright, but this fear of I'm going to fail, I'm going to do it wrong. They're all going to see that I'm not perfect, you know,
exactly.
And so the ego's need to control that to edit, you know, make sure nothing goes wrong. Make sure you don't embarrass yourself.
Exactly. But how wonderful it is to see somebody embarrassed or to feel embarrassed but find the strength in it, you know, or to step up and face your fear on stage. I mean, Therese, you're an actor. You know how that feels, but you also know how it feels to conquer that. I mean, what a beautiful place of – it's like an empowering place, you know, and all for your own spirit and your soul, you know. It's funny because I got into acting – not because I wanted to be a TV star. I to be honest, really didn't. I mean, everybody wants to be famous, this and that. I mean, there is a little bit of that, of course. I mean, let's just be totally honest. But I really got into acting because I got the right coach who turned me on to what acting for me was, which was about tapping into your emotions and facing different fears and exercising parts of your, you know, of your personality that you might, maybe don't get exercise, or maybe you're afraid of exercising, or, you know, maybe being able to use your ego, like this character is egotistical, you know, use it. Or this character is extremely vulnerable, so you need to find that place within yourself. That was the turn on, you know, that was the muse of acting for me, not being on television or being in films, even though that was like the icing on the cake. You know, it's funny that if you got your job done right, then the reward is you get to be on TV or you get to be in the play. That was the actual reward of it. But that wasn't the work, you know. It was about doing the work. You know, they say it's about doing the work. And that's it's a beautiful thing. I love actors, which is to say I love you, Therese. Sorry.
Aww. And I love you.
There's so much love on this show. That's what we love about it.
It's the love show.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, you said something there that tipped off for me, and you were talking about going through the process as an actor and going through the emotions of it and taking, you know, a step out of that to look at all the different ways that the muse works through us. Do you feel that emotion is a big part of it, too? Like, for me personally, I know that there – when I am in alignment with the muse and when the muse is flowing through me, I feel a sense of bliss. I feel a sense of ease. I feel a sense of excitement. Like there's a lot of joy there, and that's the emotion that I'm feeling. Has that been a similar experience for you?
It is, but sometimes, you know, as an actor, you know, like I'm kind of a nice guy, so for me it was more interesting to try to be the bad guy. And if you look at my acting resume, I mostly played bad guys for some reason, but I think it's because that was the turn on for me, to be the guy a little more rough around the edges, because, you know, I'm kind of a nice guy in the real world. But to answer your question, yeah, there's that bliss and that joy, but for me as an actor, I had to spend a lot of time in sort of some dark places. And I don't know if I'd say that I'm a method actor, but I think a lot of the actors that turn me on the most probably are method actors.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me to access those parts of my own psyche, I had to actually go there, and that was the turn on for me. It was like a drug. You know, maybe other actors work differently. So I guess to answer your question, Yeah, it's blissful at the end of it all, but
it's
pretty painful to try to get there, you know.
it's kind of
tiring.
Just for the sake of our listeners, so the method acting is about, getting into the character and, like, living the life that they're living. So you're sort of, like, mimicking them. You know, it's more than just I'm going to pretend to go there. I mean, some actors like Daniel Day-Lewis, I mean, his process is pretty crazy when he gets into his characters.
He'll live on the island that they're shooting the film in for like 6 months before the shooting, kind of like he'll become that guy. But we can't take our eyes off him. He's actually probably really feeling like whoever that guy is at the moment. That's why he wins awards, you know.
Yeah, I forget the name of the movie that Bjork did, but she did Method as well. And the interesting thing about Method is, it is a fine line. So if you go too far in, it can be really hard to come back from.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's brilliant to watch, but it can take a toll on people who aren't as trained in it. Like it's a process. You submerge and then you have to reemerge.
No, I totally agree, and I might be speaking out of turn because I'm not 100% on this. I wouldn't want to say something that wasn't actually correct, but Heath Ledger might have had a little bit of that, possibly. I mean, he came out of that really dark Batman place, which was, you know, the best Joker ever, and was really dark. And this, now, I'm not surmising. This is what I read, so maybe somebody else had it wrong. So, but, you know, look what happened to him. You know, he probably went to a dark place and didn't quite pull out of it.
It's true. Well, Jack Nicholson, I mean, I think there's stories about him also having like a breakdown. York had a breakdown. So it's really interesting because that's like, so the method is when we go back to talking about the muse, convoking the muse, and there is a idea of like madness that can happen where you sort of let the muse take over, which is what's happening kind of in this situation. Madness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like being on the edge of sanity and madness right there.
It's a very fine line, and it's a fascinating, fascinating topic and an incredible world that I'm fascinated with it. You know, like, I wish I was the guy that, you know, cut off his ear. Like, you know, what's his name?
You want to be Pablo Picasso?
I want to be that guy, you know. I want to be that guy, but you know, I'm in the real world.
No, that wasn't Picasso.
It's Van Gogh.
Van Gogh,
thank you,
exactly.
Yes.
You know, I think all artists, you know, secretly kind of want to be that person. Maybe I'm wrong, but or at least you would like to have glimpses of it. I don't know. Maybe not. I know that it's a fascinating topic, and I would sometimes wish that I could be that guy.
Well, I think we can both agree that the depth of passion is definitely something that, I mean, that's intoxicating to have that depth. It's commitment, right? So cutting your ear off, really, I mean, crazy as it sounds, that was 100% commitment, well, at least to that part, right? He felt this urge that he had to give it as a gift, and he literally cut it off.
Totally.
Do you know what
it would take to cut your ear off and give it as a gift? I want to know what it would take to cut my ear off and give it as a gift.
I would like to know it in a much more gentler, fluffy, happy, sparkly way.
Me
where
too.
There's no blood and pain, but...
Right. Maybe cut off a lock of hair or something.
Yes, there exactly.
Shave your head.
Shave your head. Yes. But not crazy like Britney Spears. Just.
Oh, you know what? I get that, though. That is our modern-day version of Van Gogh, though, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she just lost it. Right?
Yep.
And she just had to do it.
Did she lose it? Like, everyone gives her a hard time. I got to be honest. I'm so happy you brought that up. I don't think she lost it at all. I think she found it. I think she needed to shed some things. It seems like when people go through a moment, you know, the first thing they do is they shave their head. I think she was trying to get rid of some baggage, and that's the only way she knew how to, you know, she was lashing out a little bit. She was acting out, and I thought it was a beautiful thing that she did, and I wish – people wouldn't have given her a hard time, but would have saw it for what it was. And she's okay now. She really, really needed to shed some baggage, and she didn't know how to do it, so she shaved her head. That's just my guess, you know.
Well, yeah, and she was bucking the system that she had been so entrenched in. So it was a way of reclaiming her power.
Yeah, it was a rebellion. It was a rebellion against her own, you know. Yeah, it was a beautiful act. I loved it.
Yeah. And so
I think we should all do it. Let's do it.
Are you gonna do it? Are we all gonna do it now?
It's a heightened example of vulnerability. If you think everybody saw it, right? Everybody saw it and participated by their own choice of, like, engaging in it. And it was really for her and about her. It was her moment that she did publicly.
Absolutely. Because, and she did it publicly,
Well, at the time, she had no – it was sort of like almost like she didn't have a choice. I mean, she could have done it in the privacy of her own home and put on wigs, but she didn't. She drove out someplace. I walked into the lady's salon and took a pair of clippers and just started going at it.
Yeah, you're right. You do question, like, why she did it. She did it in, you know, it seems like somebody like Britney Spears, though, everything she does has to be in front of the camera or else it's not worth doing, kind of thing, you know.
Right. Well, I definitely think it was a message, you know, a message to the system that she had plugged herself into.
Totally.
She wanted to make sure that they got that message, yeah.
Absolutely, and you know, this is Britney Spears, you know, a beautiful girl in her youth, like, you know, like she was a beauty queen, kind of. I mean, everyone thought that she was the most pretty girl, and so she's almost rebelling against beauty as well, which I thought made her even more beautiful to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, I love that you bring that up, because as you were talking about your favorite parts to play, one of the traps, and I don't know if male actors get trapped in it, but females do, is wanting to be pretty. I want people to see me as beautiful. At least that's true for me, if I'm being honest about it. Like, see me as pretty, see me as, like, the leading lady, me as this. And yet it was that, for the sake of itself, so shallow and empty, that I got so much more meat out of the parts where the people were kind of ugly. And I don't mean physically ugly. I mean just, like, despicable, you know? Like, they were in there, and realizing that from their point of view, they don't view themselves that way. It's from, I need this, and this is how I'm going to get it. This is how I understand how to get it.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's something in there that, like, what I tried to find as an actor, which I don't know if I ever quite accomplished, but I think that the reason why we love the bad person in a film, for example, or that we have empathy for him, is because that actor has been able to find the love of that character. Like, you know, like we love the bad guy because he has found a love in the character. And I think that, you know, a lot of...
Well, we loved Heath Ledger in Batman. I mean, we loved his Joker.
Yeah.
It was powerful.
It was powerful. But he found, you know, somewhere in there you want to give that guy a hug, because you can see the vulnerability in his performance. There was vulnerability in her performance, you know. You know, so, Therese, you talk about, you know, that you wanted to, you know, be the pretty one, but that you felt the most empowered.
Alive. I felt, the most alive.
In the opposite, right? Kind of.
Well, I felt the most alive with the characters who weren't surface. They had to be deeper. They had to have, like, real, really difficult struggles. Like, one of my favorite actors is Toni Collette, and she did this great show, The United States of Tara. And man,
I didn't see it, but I do love her.
Oh, you've got to watch that series. She plays a woman who has multiple personality disorder, and so she's got all these personalities that come out. And one of them is a man named Buck, who sounds he looks exactly like he sounds. Like, he's got the trucker hat with the rolled up sleeves and cigarette dangling from his mouth and these big ugly glasses on it. And that's her. That's one of her personalities that comes out. And he was, like, one of my favorite characters. And it's like watching her totally disconnect from anything super feminine, being in this trucker belching, scratching man, and but not just not like this is my idea of what a man who acts like this does, but this is me. This is a part
of
me.
This is my man. I get it. Yeah,
this is my inner man. And I've played men on stage, like doing Shakespeare and doing a male character. And instead of like doing these things where you are posturizing that this is what I think a man looks like, no, you have to go into your own masculinity and what that is. And not so much like I'm big, I'm tough, I'm a guy, but what masculinity is to you. And for me, when I think of just the energy of feminine and masculine is doing the action, you know, taking action.
Yeah, totally.
Is a big part of masculine energy, the making it happen part is my masculine energy.
What a cool chase, you know, what a cool art form, you know, for you as a human being to be able to try to tap into those parts of you and then use it as an actress on the stage. But what a great art form. I love acting. I think it's just such a great art form, you know.
Yeah. Well, I love, I mean, I think that, you know, the things about like dance and music, and you can speak to this too, is it tends to be more esoteric, right? And even painting too, when you're looking at a painting. There's no word to describe it. It's very feeling based. There's so many things happening internally it's an inward journey. Those art forms take you more inward, where acting is, for me, something that, you know, it's very relatable. You're looking at, it's like when you read a story, watching a movie, watching theater, reading a story, you put yourself in there because a situation is happening, right? And so you're sort of like associating with characters in these situations, and would you do it the same or how would you do it different? There's always something that comes up as you're an audience member participating with this. And so it's very much like you're projecting out versus the music and the dance and the art that takes you inward. I mean, would you agree?
I do agree in a sense, absolutely. Although with the music, you know, you want to try to touch people in a similar way. I mean, obviously they can't say, hey, I wish that I was playing music like that and feeling like that, or what if I was playing it? But you want to touch people's emotions, you know, and you want to get them stirred up. So, you know, like you want, if you're on stage, Therese, you know, you're saying that, you know, the audience can kind of empathize with the situation that you're in and they can place themselves in it, you know. Similar with music, you know, it's different with music, you're definitely right. But in a similar sense, you know, you want people to get stirred. I mean, at least I do. When I play music, I want people to feel, and I want them to be stirred, and I want them to, you know, if they don't dance, I want them to dance. If they can't sing, I want them to shout out, you know. You know, that's kind of what a Vintage Trouble show is about, is that we really treat our audience as a fifth member, and we really get them involved in what we're doing. And it's a really nice synergy back and forth between audience and performer. It's like we break down the wall and we just try to get people to commit to that hour and a half of, you know, what we like to call bliss. I mean, it's really a moment that we're all having, and people will come out of our shows like sweaty and we like to say come dressy, leave messy.
I mean, I you know, for the audience out there, I've known Richard for a while. A very long time. We won't say how long because, you know, we're both 20, right, Richard?
In spirit, yes.
Yes. But I have been to a few of the Vintage Trouble shows, and it really is an experience. And the biggest thing, the first time I went to their show, I was blown away because, you know, a lot of our audience knows and that I read energies and I work with energies a lot. So there was such a tremendous amount of love in that room and just joy and people just being, like Richard said, in their bliss, that it was like, it was amazing. And everyone was dancing and it was just really just a very fun atmosphere. And you don't get that from a lot of shows. I mean, you go to shows to be entertained, of course, but to have an actual experience like that, it was amazing. So I just want to also give out a big shout-out to the Troublemakers because, you know, hopefully.
The Troublemakers are the fans that follow Vintage Trouble. They named themselves the Troublemakers. And, you know, what you're talking about, Jess, thanks for tuning into that and experiencing it for yourself a little bit, or at least having a feel of it. It's something that happened very spontaneously and very organically. You know, we started playing small shows in Los Angeles, and we couldn't get our friends to come see us, you know, five times a week, but we could throw a party five times a week, and people would come. I mean, literally. So we made our concerts feel like parties, so people would want to show up every single time, literally. And what would start happening is, once you started showing up, then you would start meeting the other people that are showing up, and all of a sudden you have all these new friends, and then, you know, new bands were forming within this community, and love relationships, you know, people were getting pregnant. all kinds of fun, crazy, wild stuff was going on. So it became a community, and that's how we got that sort of feel and that vibe. And then we took that all over the world and just kind of stamped it out everywhere we went. And the way we were able to do it is get people talking, you know. It's not just about the band. It's about you guys and what you're doing and how you're feeling and what's going on with you, and get them talking to each other. And so really the Troublemaker community is it's exactly that. It's a community that that supports itself. They support each other. You know, last night, you know, we played a show and we had people coming in from Japan. Believe it or not, we have people from the UK, and we have people following us throughout the U.S. on this tour. So people, I mean, it's a real phenomenon, you know, sort of like the Deadheads or the Fish fans or whatever. I mean, it's not quite that, but it's its own thing. And it just feels really real because it's people that are out really wanting to feel something, and it's changed a lot of people's lives. And I know that's a really strong statement, but I wouldn't say it unless it was told to me by them, you know, multiple people, multiple times, because it's kind of enriched their lives, because it's given them a new lease on maybe having new friends, bringing new energies into their lives. Like, they've opened up to this Troublemaker community, and the energy is so tremendous that you can't help but get sucked in, and it can be anything that you want it to be. You can have all new friends from all over the world who will really be super, like, real with you. Like, if you go to the UK, you can sleep on their couch. If you go to a show, they'll say where they want you to meet before the show, because they're having a pre-party, and then after the show, we're going to meet over here, and they pull everyone in. It's not clicky, and that's the beautiful thing about our fan base, is it's not clicky at all. Everybody's welcome. There's young and old, and it's like a family more than anything.
Well, and how beautiful is it that it seems to me, and, you know, I'd love to get your feedback on this, but it just seems like, you know, the Muse is working through the band, but it's also expanded out into this community. So the Muse is like doing double time. So it's because people are having an experience at the show, and then they're also making connections with others, and then it becomes, you know, it keeps on expanding and expanding and expanding. I mean, the Troublemakers community is massive on social media, massive. So
it really is.
It's like the Muse kind of said, hey, you know, I'm going to work through you guys in the band, but then it's really going to, I'm going to work through all these other people too. Because people, when they're at the shows, at least this is my experience, and those in the surrounding area of me, is there such a sense of surrender to the experience that really allows, like, the Muse to come through so that they can have a really joyful experience.
You know, you're so right. And the way you're so right about that, you're tapped into it. The way it's working, you know, double time, is that, you know, it's getting these people to do other things besides go to Vintage Trouble shows. I mean, they're getting together and, you know, doing events. Like, they'll all go to a thing, you know, like an event to raise money, for example, and they'll do it together, and they'll get together and they'll do that. Or somebody's down on their luck and they're having financial problems, you know, they'll get together and they'll lift that person up. You know, that's so powerful. I mean, it surpasses music and the band and a fan club. You know, it's about people. So basically, it's exactly what you said. You know, the Muse is working overtime, and it's expanding out and becoming a much bigger entity than just working through a fan club. I mean, these people really are doing things that are so outside of music together. It's just really, it's about spirit more than anything.
Yeah, it's amazing the transformational quality of the type of music that comes through you now. You know, I've seen the different styles of Richard's playing, you know, from all these years, and it's amazing because there is a sense of soulfulness that you were alluding to this earlier in the call, that there's a sense of soulfulness now that you've accessed that is really coming through your music, and you do feel it when you're there, regardless of whether you are at the show or, you know, seriously, I have put on, it's the first song that I ever heard that you guys did was Blues Hand Me Down, and of course it starts with this amazing drum riff, which is Richard, right? And I stopped. I'm so glad that I wasn't driving my car at the time, because I like stopped what I was doing, and I was like so blown away. And every time I hear that song, regardless of where I am, you know, in my car, it like booms over the speakers, and I'm like, wow. Like, that is very impactful. And that's, because it feels so authentic to me. It feels so real in a way that you don't hear in music that much these days.
Well, it's great that you tapped into that. That means your own musical, you know, meter is right on point. I think the reason that you think it feels so real is the truth is, and allow me to romanticize it because I'm in it, but I lived through it. It was real because we recorded it in such a real way. We recorded that song when we were only a band for 3 months, and we weren't even trying to make a record, that first record. We were just recording sort of some songs to see what we had, and we recorded them so well that we made a record out of it. But it's very raw and real, and there is a little bit of improvising in there. And we did everything in one take with the band, and if we messed it up, we'd go back and we'd have to do the whole thing again as a band. And see, a lot of bands, most bands today, they don't record like that. You know, you record the drums first, and then you put the bass over it, and then the guitar, and then the singer, and you know, the guitar player does his track 100 times before he gets it right, and you know, and it's just it becomes like a cookie cutout of what a song is meant to be, which is, you know, we're talking about art, and look, you can't say there's any right way or wrong way. Everyone does it their own way. But the reason why you're tapped into that real feeling is because of the way it was recorded, which is super raw and super organic. And that is a beautiful muse to chase. And it's funny that we discovered that muse in the moment of making that record. And now we've kind of grabbed onto that muse, and we keep her with us for all of our recordings. Like, it's almost like she appeared to us, and then we kept her. It's like, you're not going anywhere. So we learned how to record on that first record. We heard what it sounded like spontaneously, and now we do all of our recordings like that.
I love that. And that really is so uncharacteristic of how, even in the last 20 years, how recordings are done. I mean, it sounds to me, the way you described it, that's like stuff that how the Beatles originally recorded. You know, they weren't recording on multi-track. They weren't in a multi-track studio, you know, sitting there with, you know, a 48-track system saying, okay, we're just going to record guitars today, or we're just doing vocals today. No, it wasn't even that. That's the beauty of it, is that there's really a lot of room for error, and there's a lot of room for improvisation, which is just blows my mind amazing.
Yeah, and it's really it's kind of the drug of music. I mean, it's, for me as a musician, that's what turns me on, and that's was an early turn on for me in this band. I mean, I kind of stopped playing music because I just wasn't being turned on anymore. You know, other things started speaking to me. So it's just been a nice comeback for me to be able to be raw and real in that way, you know. And also it's about the imperfections. You know, I think we kind of alluded to this earlier. I think Therese was talking about something about this. But the imperfections sometimes, like in a performance, can be a real turn on. I mean, everything doesn't have to be perfect. You know, we don't have to be the perfect thing. It's about leaning into the imperfections. And in our music, we kind of did that. And if there was a little mistake, sometimes we would leave it because it was more magical than making that part perfect. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's the it gives it the special color. It keeps it from mm-hmm. being this rote performance and makes it real.
Yeah, and again, that's the turn-on, at least for me anyway. I mean, music today is so perfect and quantized, and everything's on computers, and they have a thing called Beat Detective, so any drum you do, they put it in there, and then it fixes it and makes it perfect. And then auto-tune, you know, people can't sing today, so, you know, they put their vocal in, and then they tune the vocal. You know, even kids today are starting to mimic auto-tune without even realizing it. They're starting to sing like, It's almost kind of strange. It's like some kind of weird disease or something.
And again, that I hope is eradicated quite quickly because
hopefully, but I don't know. It's a big world. Hopefully the pendulum will swing back and things will start to become more real. I mean, look, there's always a backlash and things always come back around. And, you know, live music like that will come back. And live bands have never left. Or bands that, you know, record live like that, they just are not on the radar, basically.
Right.
Which is sad. There's so much great art out there, and it makes us wonder how many great actors are out there that are undiscovered because their hair cut wasn't right, or, you know, or they weren't the right weight, or but they are could be an incredible actress. Or with musicians, there's so many talented musicians that aren't getting the breaks that they deserve, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And how many undiscovered artists are out there, you know, that people are being like, well, I don't like your painting, but in 20 years from now, you know, it's going to be
I'll love it in 20 years, yeah.
In 20, exactly. 20, yeah. When you die, you'll be famous.
Well, one thing Therese and I have talked about a little bit on the show, and Therese, I'd love for you to jump in on this, is that when you're in a creative process, when you're working with the muse, or when you're working on a career in a particular area, how there is, you hit this awkward phase where it's all of a sudden it's like, you know, everything kind of drops out. There's just crickets. Like, you just hear crickets chirping. You're like, what just happened? And things just feel really, like, there's that fluid movement isn't as prominent. It just feels awkward.
Like, I'm afraid to talk about it.
He's not going to like this, but I'm going there. But because Therese and I have both experienced this. I've experienced it in my writing and with dance. She's experienced it in her painting and with acting, and we've experienced it in our businesses too, because we're both entrepreneurs. So it's kind of like, and we have people in our audience that have come to us and have said, but it's, you know, this and this was happening and now nothing's happening. It's like, well, this is part of the process.
It's part of the process, and we see it lived out in front of us, our eyes, every day. And let's give some good examples. Let's take the Rolling Stones, for example. Nobody wants to hear a Rolling Stones song that wasn't written before 1975, you know, or whatever.
Right.
I'm just throwing out that random date. And is it because they're not making good music anymore, or is it because we are just so honed in what they used to do that we can't accept anything new? You know, that's a good question. But the truth is, maybe they just kind of lost that edge and they just weren't making good records. And that's just the sad truth of it. It's not just them. I mean, you can think of so many bands that are going through exactly what you're talking about. And we get to see it played out in front of us all the time. It seems like with actors, though, you know, they get better with age, or they can get into more of a character actor thing. Or, like, do actors really ever lose their... I mean, I guess some of them do, but it just doesn't seem as prominent as in music,
mm-hmm.
You know. And then there's writers. I mean, you know, like, you know, was Hemingway, was all of his work early on the better work? I mean, take Kerouac, for example. They say that Kerouac wrote those few good novels and everything after that was shit. I don't agree with that, but that's how everyone else thinks. Maybe he lost his edge, you know, when he wasn't out on the road like he was. He was writing on his couch, you know, drinking too much alcohol. Maybe he just lost that edge, you know. So how do we keep our edge? You know, it's a really, really, really excellent question. You know, for me, thank God, I have enough muses that I just kind of parlay into something else. So I'm always sort of excited, and I feel very blessed like that. But I do see, you know, people losing it all the time, and they're just not as good as they used to be, or maybe they're better – but it doesn't turn us on in the right way.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I think, you know, I quit music because I wasn't turned on by it anymore. But the weird thing is, the day I quit playing drums, I bought a piano and started writing music and playing more music, which was weird. I was just accessing, you know, a different piece of it, you know. I burnt out on acting because I wasn't able to do the jobs I wanted to do. I had to go to the, you know, and Therese, you know what this feels like. You know, you got to go to 100 auditions before you even get a role in front of you that even turns you on. I mean, maybe that's not the case with you, but, you know, as an actor, you know, you got to do a lot of stuff sometimes that maybe it just doesn't really turn you on. And that's really not the reason why you started. Like, I used to do a lot of commercials, and that was cool.
Yeah.
And I made great money doing it, but that's not why I became an actor, you know. And I got tired of driving across town for a commercial for Staples when I knew that I'm not going to be that guy, and they're never going to hire me for that guy, and it's like it becomes like a meat market, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I kind of lost my edge for the love of wanting to be in that business a little bit, and so I kind of got back into playing music, thank God, or writing, you know? I'm not sure that I really answered your question, but I completely agree that all artists, it seems like, go through those phases. You know, for me, like I said, though, I guess that once I became stale at something, I just kind of parlayed into something else. And it's all, like I said earlier, it feels like I'm chasing the same muse. I'm just voicing it different.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, sometimes when you're doing something too long, for too long, the reason why stops being the pure reason why, which is because I love it.
Right.
Because I love it. Then it becomes, when you start doing commercials for Staples, why are you doing it? Is it because of the opportunity to add credit to your resume, the money, whatever the reason? Is it about because you love it, because you love Staples and you love this commercial?
Exactly. No, I really do love Staples. I just didn't want to be in the first.
Yeah, so, you know, that I think that's usually where I think all artists go through this. That is part of the grander cycle of, because we talk about the creative process being very much like the life cycle of the human being. There's birth, which is pure joy and potential and all these things you're going to create. Then there's that awkward teenage stage. And I figured this out when I was teaching art to other people, when I was teaching them how to do a painting, and I was watching. Really, it sunk in. It, like, really hit me when I was watching these people who would come in with so much hope and potential and joy and love and excitement, and then they would hit this wall of, I fucked it up. It's over. I'm done.
And that sounds like a short amount of time, right? So if you were a teacher,
right?
We're talking about over a course or over a painting.
Right.
Oh,
and this was a class. This was an individual class that I would teach regularly, and I'd have fresh students every time. So I really got this great observation course in watching the creative process, especially with people who were, and it was like watching babies, because it wasn't like I was watching accomplished artists tackle a piece. I was watching someone who was like, I'm going to decide to paint something today. I don't really paint. I've never painted. I want to learn how to paint. So it's like these beautiful babies coming in with all this joy and potential and the idea of this greatness that they want to create. And they're in it, and they're really enjoying it. They're laying the first layers down. They're like, oh, my God, this is so much fun. This is amazing. And then it's like car wreck. It's like, you can hear the crash, the collision in their brain that happened.
Yeah, totally.
And
it's funny. I think that teenage phase that you're talking about, it kind of refers back to maybe the ego that we were talking about earlier. Because why is the car crashing? Because, you know, they want that painting to be so good, and all of a sudden it's not turning out, and they're putting massive amounts of judgment on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's probably why the teenage phase goes bad, is because all of a sudden they're in their ego, they're out of that blissful birthplace, and they're heading towards death in that painting, I guess.
Well, and they don't realize it's the middle of the process. You know, and exactly. The thing is, the middle of the process always looks like that. No matter, you can take that diorama and slap it on any situation, and the middle of the process is always awkward, uncomfortable, messy. It doesn't look like, it looks like you veered off course somehow, even though it really is just part of the actual process. And so, and I think that there, if people don't know this, that they get into this fear of, like, I missed it. I missed the boat. You know, like, I think that once you've done it several times, and sometimes it takes several times to get this, it's the part that stops you. So as far as, like, if we're looking at an actor and their trajectory, and they're getting in there, and they're like, this is what I want to do, and they've been in a few plays, and it was really fun and easy at first, and then they hit the awkward wall, which is, why am I doing this? You know, like, what? Who am I trying to be? What am I trying to say? What's my purpose in this? And I think I think maybe is a key point when you get to that stage is the why. Know your why.
Yeah, I think it comes down to experience. Your why. To reconnect with your why, I totally agree. I think some of that is experience, though, because for me, for example, I realized, but only after the fact, that some of those really awkward phases I was going through is when I was actually growing the most.
Yes.
If I could have just realized
it,
you know, if I could have realized it then, I wouldn't have been so judgmental on myself, and I would have said, this is part of the process, and this is an amazing part of the process. Maybe it's the best part, and don't judge, and just get through it, and learn, and realize how much you're taking from this, you know? So that might be a key, but how would you have that key if you hadn't gone to the end of it to receive the key, you know?
Right.
It's a tough one.
Well, and the trick is to keep going. Don't stop when you get there. That's the secret. The secret is just keep going.
Right. Perseverance, they talk about. It's a key word that they use, you know, in any form of art, it seems like, or the industry of it, like perseverance. You know, you want to be an actor, you got to have perseverance, you know, which is exactly what you're saying. You know, stick it out, see what happens, you know. I could kind of say that with music, even though I did give it up. But, you know, the truth is, I've been playing music for a lot of the years of my life. So in a way, I have persevered because I have continued to play the instrument.
I was going to say, when you say you give it up, I kind of have a disconnect in my brain because aren't we talking to you from technically a tour bus? Aren't you on tour?
Yes, sure.
Aren't
exactly.
you playing music?
Somehow I persevered somehow, even when I gave up. But there was a moment in my life where I really did give up my dream. I gave up my goal. I gave it up. I mean, yes, I did buy the piano and I did continue in music, but that was only for myself. I wasn't trying to write songs and be a hit or anything, or now I'm going to be the front man. I really truly did give up music to pursue something else, you know. But yeah, somehow I found my way back and here I am. So
I would say instead of giving up, I think I would reframe it as in you let go of expectation.
Yeah.
And you just went back. You just went back to the pure beingness of it, meaning you just went back to be with it rather than forcing it to look like something. Like, and we do that. I did that, too, with my acting career. I was really forcing it to be, look like this, like support me, make me look pretty, make me popular, you know, put me lots of work, do these things for me. And I too let go. I wouldn't say gave up, even though I'm not acting right now. I'm raising my two kids, and that's more important than being at rehearsal away from them. And there's there's a lot of things I can do right now that stimulate me artistically while I get to be in close proximity to them. But I wouldn't call it giving up on it. I'm just letting go. Of what it
you know,
it's
great.
Like.
It's great you said that. I'm gonna hang on to that. I'm not gonna say that I gave up back then when I have interviews and stuff, because you know I do talk about it. Sometimes it comes up, and I'm gonna actually say, you know, I let it go for a while.
Laugh because you are on tour right now. I just want to like reemphasize that in case anyone missed it. He is on tour.
I am living my dream. Living my dream.
Yes.
He really
my
is.
My real true one dream that I had when I was a kid, I'm actually living it right now.
There you go.
Well, and just to, you know, put a little filler into this, because, you know, like I said, I've known Richard for a while, is I can recall a time, long time ago, when he and I were playing this this what-if game of, like, what we're going to be. You know, I guess the equivalent is the what I'm going to be when I grow up. And he's had this vision that he's living now.
That's what I was saying back then. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. I remember it very vividly. We were talking about this. And now you're living it. And the interesting thing is I remember the phase where you were saying you thought you gave up. And it was more of a letting go. That's how I perceived it, is it looked like a letting go. And I was like, I know how the muse works. The muse is going to find him. It's supposed to work out. Yeah.
It'll all work out. Thank God for myself. And I pinch myself and thank the stars that I did let go, but
yes.
I was able to put myself in another creative space.
Mm-hmm.
If I hadn't been able to put myself in another creative space, who knows where I would be now. And by the way, Jess, it's no wonder why you are where you are, because I remember your energy, and I used to feel your energy, and I still feel the same energy from you, and you are right where you seem to need to be and deserve to be, and all that has come to fruition for you. I'm just being happy for you right now. Sorry.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I will definitely receive that.
Yeah, please do. You're awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate that. It's amazing to see how something like a vision that you might be saying as, you know, when you're a lot younger, and there is a letting go process. I mean, there are things that I really wanted back then that I had to let go of for a time too. One of those things for me was with my writing. I've always been a fiction writer since I could write, I guess, since I was a child.
Nice.
And I had these stories in me, and I went through a time where I was going through the query process with publishers and getting rejected constantly. And this was many, many years ago. And it really, I did exactly what you're talking about, Richard. I shelved it, and I said, I'm going to go in a different direction right now. I didn't know if that meant giving it up. I didn't know what that meant at the time. I just shelved
sure.
it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the books came out last year. So they're
nice.
Real now. They're real. And it was one of those things where it's like, oh, so that's how it works. So it's kind of like you were saying, you know, earlier that you, in hindsight, you look at the process and you can say to the younger version of yourself, no, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. This is the part that feels really uncomfortable. And it's okay to feel that way. Just keep moving forward. This is part of
absolutely.
It. It's part of your process.
It really is, and I love to give that kind of advice because, you know, young drummers will come up to me and say, you know, what do I do? What do I got to do? And I love those questions because I'm able to give them these keys from the future and give them to them right now and say, well, this would be an interesting thing to try and see how it works for you, you know, which is about perseverance, and it's, you know, some of those stepping stones and not to get discouraged and realize that you are excelling when you don't think that you are. It's a beautiful process, you know. And speaking on the muse on that, you know, I think that it's important for people to understand also that you got to put in the work to feed the muse.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's like the muse just doesn't come up and make magical things happen. You have to actually feed that muse for her
mm-hmm.
to thrive and to come up with, you know, that energy, you know. So it's a constant sort of feeding, you know, it kind of goes all the way back to being biblical. I mean, you reap what you sow, you know, or the New Age version of that, you know, the law of attraction, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all kind of saying the same exact thing, you know, you are what you think you are, you know, it's the power of positive
yeah.
thinking, you know, you kind of have to feed that, I think, so that later you can kind of throw it all away, but you have the tools somewhat.
No, I totally agree. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's inspired, inspired thought without taking the action is just daydreaming. That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
I love to daydream, by the way.
I do too.
I'm a daydreamer.
Yes, so do I.
I'm a dreamer, baby.
Exactly. And that is part of the strategy here. I'm getting on my soapbox. Hold on. I'm on my
box. Bring it. Bring it on.
Speak the word of the truth. But seriously, part of it is the dreaming. So important. Has to happen. Has to happen. It's part of the it's part of the process of manifesting anything you want. You need to dream it into being. And the next part is the part that people kind of get turned off by, which is the work and or you can call it practice. I like to call it practice because it sometimes work to me denotes that maybe there's a little effort and it's done, where practice, you know, you have to show up kind of daily. Practice means you do it again and you do it again and again and again
Exactly.
Well, and they think that people, you know, they get kind of bummed out by that or like, you know, and I think part of it is learning how to reframe it and make it work for you. Because really the day of the show, think about this, right? Most of your time is spent, what, do you have a drum pad on the bus? Are you like drumming on things? What are you doing to keep limber?
I do that exactly, just as if I was stretching, like I was going to do a run or something. I just stretch, just get my muscles warm, basically.
Limber, but you're always like something in your head is like,
hey, that was pretty good. You should invoke the musician muse.
The rhythm muse. Teresa's going to be a drummer now. You can be her mentor, Richard.
Can we just trade muses for a day? Like, I'll try some painting. You could try some drumming.
You can play a show, Therese.
It would be like watching a kitten with a string. Like, I'd be good for about 5 seconds, and then I'd be like, ooh, shiny thing. You know, like, everyone's like, where did the rhythm
right, but,
go? You know?
But we would offer encouragement from the side. Keep going. Keep going. You can do it.
Here we go. I would say, though, that the day of the show happens once in a while, whereas practice is what you do every day. You're not, I mean, sometimes you're in a show daily, but that's for an allotted amount of time. It's not like every single night you go on for the rest of your life. You have, you know, gigs. And then there's downtime. But in the downtime, you're still doing the things that keep you connected to your art form.
Absolutely. Oh, God, yeah. In fact, Jessica, you could probably attest to this, but, you know, now they have the iPhones, which have great recorders on them, or maybe you carry a recorder, but I do more writing when I'm not writing, when I'm just driving down the street, or I'm walking, or, you know, and sometimes I'm embarrassed because I have to duck away and write something on a piece of paper, and people are thinking, like, I've been in a restaurant where it's like, are you, like, a food critic? Like, what are you doing? Like, you're freaking out. I've been in the dentist chair, believe it or not, and said, could I please have a pad and a paper? And they're looking at me like, I'm crazy.
I love that. And it's true. You never know when it's going to strike. I mean, I've gotten really crafty with using Siri on my iPhone to get voice notes down while I'm driving. Because it's like when you're driving, you obviously can't, like, you know, write something. So I'm all about the voice notes. It's like, oh okay, so
well,
here's the idea.
You guys, I sing as well, and that's actually the art form I feel the most vulnerable about. That's the one that scares me the most, is singing. And I've done it on stage. I've sung on stage in front of people. But vocal warm-up, it's important. And when you realize you need to do it, sometimes you're in public and you can't get out of it. And, I mean, the car is always easy because – you know, you're in your own little bubble, and so if you're like screaming your head off, no one's gonna hear you. But I've you know done vocal warm ups in a public bathroom before, where I go into a stall,
wow.
And I'm like, you know, doing my warm.
Yeah,
I've scared a few people away from bathrooms by sitting in the stall singing.
Yep, they'll forgive you in your car because they almost expect people in the car every once in a while to be singing, but in the stall, I can see them being. But you know what? How cool is it to think, though, that maybe those people, they don't actually really care. They're actually more intrigued. And the more you pour yourself into that vocal warm-up in that stall, the more intrigued that they actually are. That's the actual beauty of it, is that nobody cares. It's not a train wreck because it's not going to crash, but people want to stick in there and see what's going on, you know. It's probably the most exciting thing that's happening to them in that moment.
In a public bathroom ever, yeah.
But, you know, sometimes knowing that could give you strength in knowing that, look, these people want me to be, you know, they want me to be good it just kind of goes back to that ego. Like, why do you even care what people think about you? Like, who cares, really?
It's hard to
kind of get over.
I couldn't
do a vocal warm-up in a bathroom. I wouldn't be able to do it.
Well, it was before an audition, you know. So it's like, you can't go into those things cold. You just can't.
Yeah.
Kiss of death right there. Go into an audition without warming up. Forget it. So it's like you got to do what you got to do in the moment. But some of my favorite viral videos are the ones where someone's recording someone who doesn't realize they're being watched and they're dancing.
Maybe not the viral ones, but I know exactly what energy you're talking about. Exactly.
Yes, like where they're like at the bus stop and there's this one that it makes me smile even just thinking about it. But there's a woman and she looks middle-aged and she's at a bus stop and I think it's in the UK, but she's just sitting there like she's got her headphones in and she's like gently bouncing. And then she kind of looks around to the sides like to see if anyone's looking. And then she just totally like busts out a move and then someone walks by so she goes back to bouncing.
Wow. That's so funny.
And somebody in a work building is across the street recording, she doesn't even know it. So when she thinks no one's walking down the sidewalk, this woman busts out into some serious dance move.
I love it. And we're all guilty of it.
We are completely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome.
Waiting for the subway in New York on the platform. Actually, it was one of my favorite times to do that because the subways can really take a long time. I mean, they're supposed to come every 10 or 15 minutes, but sometimes you get congestion and it can take 45 minutes. The next thing you know, you're like on the platform and you're just like, Jamiroquai pops into your headphones and you're like, I gotta go.
I love it. And again, the people that you think are looking at you crazy, they're probably looking at you with envy, even if they have a disgruntled look on your face. Like if they could be so lucky to be jamming Jamiroquai, and dancing in the subway,
Yes. You guys remember the movie Napoleon Dynamite?
Yes.
How great.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's kind of that moment, the end when he's on stage and he's like, you know what, just go for it.
Yeah.
the most amazing thing.
And it's the most amazing thing, right? Exactly.
Yeah. Good times.
I know. Really good times. This is, as usual, I was, explaining to Richard, our audience knows this by now, but we were explaining to Richard how our shows just kind of take on a life of their own. We have no idea what's coming. We just jump in with complete trust, and this thing has been unfolding quite magically, actually. And
it's a great way to do your show, by the way. I commend you for putting yourself in the danger zone, so to speak, and just allowing things to happen. It's great. Like, I commend you for it.
Oh, thank you. It's always been a huge leap of faith. Even before Therese was on as a co-host, I would just like launch into my shows and just go.
Nice.
And hope that it turned out well.
That's great.
Because we never quite know what's going to come through. And so far, knock on wood, we've had, fun shows and fun things come through. Wouldn't you say the same, Therese?
Oh, yeah. Magic happens when you allow room for the unexpected, for sure.
Yeah.
I should have played a joke on you guys, and everything that you said, I would just say yes or no. Yes. No.
I would have so called you out on that. Yeah. I would have been like, what is wrong with you? This is you.
He's been replaced by a robot.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh. This has just been such a pleasure, Richard.
Cool.
We're so excited to have had you on the show. This has been an amazing show.
Thank you for having me. Therese, it was nice to speak and talk to you. And Jessica.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'll be talking to you soon, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. And for those of you out there in our audience, if you want to learn more about Richard, he is on the cover of Drum Magazine for November.
Yeah.
Yay! And the article is amazing. I got the magazine, I read the article. I suggest you do the same, so run out and grab your copy. And then also, check out Vintage Trouble. They came out with their second album, One Hopeful Road, back in August. It's an amazing record, so check that out. And then you can find them on Facebook under Vintage Trouble.
Cool.
And join all the other troublemakers in this wonderfully expanding community. And you guys hit number one, or you're top of the charts in Japan when the album dropped, right?
Yeah, we got a number one single there, and we're actually going there Monday to go play a TV show that has a reach of 17 million people, which is kind of cool, and it's going to be live. So we're going to play in front of 17 million people live, which is exciting. And so seems like it's kind of blowing up in Japan a little bit, which is really cool. And you know what? I want to give a shout-out to the Japanese culture as a whole. I fell in love with it. It's such an incredible thing. I've learned so much about it, and I've learned so much about sort of myself through it. It's just an incredible, like, they just have so much respect, you know. Like, for example, you know, we were talking about the subway. People in Japan, they get out of the subway, they all kind of get in a line and they file out. And guess what happens? They get out of that subway in like 2 minutes, which would have taken an American crowd 20 minutes. I mean, and they do it naturally.
Yeah.
You know, and when they're sick, you know, they put that thing, the mask on their face. I never knew what that was. Like, I thought they were germophobes, and I'm like, they're just afraid of germs. Well, that's not the case. They actually don't want to get you sick, and they're respecting you, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful community. But on a music level, man, the Japanese have soul. They really, really have soul. They have incredible listening ears. They follow every nuance of your music. They don't sit out there on their iPhones and tape every moment. They listen and they pay attention and they're in tune with you. And it's really a beautiful, beautiful country, and I love it so much. So we're going there on Monday to kick some butt. It should be fun.
Awesome.
Wow,
awesome.
Sounds amazing.
That does sound amazing. And another place that you'll probably see Vintage Trouble pop up again is on The View. They are totally good friends with Whoopi Goldberg. She adores them.
Somebody's got to be.
I'm sure you guys will be on The View again very soon. How many times have you been on? Like 3 or 4 times?
Three or four times. She brings us on for like, if it's her birthday, she'll bring us on. Or if it's her first day back from something, she wants to have her boys on, which is super cool. And, you know, what a lot of people don't know about Whoopi Goldberg is she comes from music. Like, she was around, like, at the Fillmore East and Frisco, listening to Santana back in the, you know, Haight and Ashbury days. I mean, she's, you know, that lady, you know. So she really, really has a real knowledge of music, you know. So it's great to hang out with her on that level. She's a beautiful, beautiful person.
Awesome.
Awesome sauce. Okay, well, we are going to wrap up for the day. And we really appreciate having you here, Richard. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome, and we will be back next week with another awesome show. This is Jessica Nevins with the Divine It Girl Radio Show. Love and sparkles to all. Bye.
Bye.
Peace.